You're listening to the Plain Label Podcast. Hello and welcome back to the Plain Label Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Williams. In this episode, we are discussing twist endings or final moment reveals, and we're focusing on two films, the 2001 film The Others, 2011's Kill List. Joining me for this episode is a first-time guest. She is a talented writer that I was lucky enough to read some of her work late last year. She is one of the co-hosts of the Scream Writers Podcast, our very own Cowardly Custard, Ariel Relaford.
Cowardly Custard?
Yeah, Cowardly Custard. That's what they say in The Others. That's what I think it's Anne, isn't it? The daughter's name.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what she calls her brother. Cowardly Custard.
And she says that over and over. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Before getting into our discussion, I would like to mention that we are still proud members of the Deliberate Noise Network. Search Deliberate Noise or Movie Noise or Comic Book Noise in your podcast app for more great shows from the network. Ariel, let's do a little drink roll call. What is it that you are drinking much later than you wanted to, which was right after you watched my selection? But what is it that you're drinking?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. I'm drinking an old fashioned.
Mm.
And made with kind of writers. Whiskey? Writer's tears, of course.
Nice. I like it. Is it good?
Yeah. What about you?
I am having I'm having vodka because that's kind of the staple, but I ran out of mixers.
Oh.
And because it was, you know, as of recording, it was a stressful last couple of days. Mm-hmm. And so what I have here is it's my kids. It is a non-alcoholic pink grapefruit juice for New Year's Eve. And so it's from Myers. So, you know, it's the real fancy sparkling pink grapefruit juice. So I'm having that with some vodka and it is really sweet. So I am going to do my damnedest to not be smacking on the mic. Because it is really, really sweet.
So you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah, that's right. It's either that or mixing it with just, you know, like with water. And I don't usually mix it with the water. And the only other thing that we have that's alcoholic in the house is tequila. And I'm definitely not just drinking that by itself. So
it depends. There's good kinds though, well, that you can sip.
Yeah. Well, see, my wife is a huge tequila person. And so she used to manage a restaurant that had like a lot of high end tequila.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was very well versed in all of that kind of stuff. So we always have tequila at the house and it's never, ever me that is drinking it. Yeah. So that is what we are drinking. Those are the two movies that we are talking about. We're going to go chronologically because that is what we do. And we're going to start with Ariel's pick, and it is from 2001 and it is called The Others.
Sometimes the world of the dead gets mixed up with the world of the living.
As you can see, the housework has been rather neglected since the servants disappeared almost a week ago.
Do you mean they just vanished?
Into thin air.
How do you do, children? I'm your new nanny.
Why are you going to leave us too?
Why should I leave you?
The others said they wouldn't. They did, and then it happened.
Why have you opened the curtains?
It was Victor.
You told your brother that there was someone else in the room.
There was.
That'll do, Anne.
I've seen them too.
Have?
Sooner or later, she'll see them. Then everything will be different.
Run! Can't you hear it? There's someone there. your daughter.
And the IMDb plot synopsis of the film goes like this. And if you happen to be new, these are not things that I write. These are plot synopses that you find on IMDb, and most of the time they are terrible. And it goes like this. A woman named Grace retires with her two children to a mansion on Jersey toward the end of the Second World War, where she's waiting for her husband to come back from battle. The children have a disease, which means they cannot be touched by direct sunlight without being hurt in some way. They will live alone there with oppressive, strange, and almost religious rules until she needs to hire a group of servants for them. Their arrival will accidentally begin to break the rules with unexpected consequences. Ariel, that is not well done by the IMDb person, but no. I do enjoy reading them.
Yeah, that's a fun attempt.
Yeah. Well, some of the times it's a oh boy, while you're about halfway through. So this is your pick. How did we come about this topic? Was this something that did I have you pick it, or mm-hmm. I don't quite recall. You
picked we were one? Bouncing ideas, and I was like, oh, this would be a cool idea.
Because
I love.
What is it about? So what mm-hmm. is it about this theme and then this film that you enjoy?
I just love plot twists and surprise endings. Like mm-hmm. they're just so much fun to watch and enjoy. And I like to also write things with plot twists and surprise endings. Mm-hmm. So it was just a natural choice for me.
Sure. So getting to the others, is this something that you had seen a few times? Did you see this in the theater? What's kind of your history with this movie?
What year did it come out again?
2001.
No, I definitely did not see it in theater because I was like 10, and I don't think my family would have let me see it. But I have seen it a few times. It is one of my favorites. It's just so good. The acting's fantastic. The premise, the concept, the reveal. Mm-hmm. Like people are going to, if you haven't seen it yet, you're probably going to have a nice spoiler.
Oh yeah, right? This is definitely, especially with this theme, this is very spoiler rich.
Yeah, don't listen further if you don't want to have this movie ruined.
Yeah, unless you're somebody like our Mr. Alan White, who will definitely not be watching any of the horror movies and will just live vicariously through us. And so, hello, Alan, and I realize that you will not be watching these movies, and so you do not mind if we spoil them. So yes, the others, this was one for me that I think I saw probably just a couple of years after it came out. I just remember that it, this was shortly after Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman split up. And I remember it being, I think it was one of the movies that she did after Moulin Rouge, if I am remembering that correct as I scan. Yes, so Moulin Rouge. So she did Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise, and then Moulin Rouge, which obviously was a big deal, and then the others. And so I kind of went into this and didn't really know what to expect the first time I had watched it, and was mm-hmm. of course blown away by the ending that we'll talk about. And so, yeah, when you mentioned it, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. I know what that's about. And I kind of, the only thing that I knew about, I guess the only thing that I remembered about the film was that ending, though.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, it's so shocking because there's so many like red herrings the entire time. Mm-hmm. But it's the thing that stands out the most.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting when you rewatch it knowing how a twist is going to be. And so what I think is interesting about that is, so this was a film that both you and I knew going into what the twist was, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we talk about our second film, it was a film that neither one of us had seen before.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So, and maybe we will not revisit that movie.
Yeah, probably not. No,
maybe a one-timer. That was one of the themes that we did at one point, was one-timer movies.
And that's one of them.
yeah, definitely. So what I think is what is interesting about this is watching it and seeing kind of the construction of it, kind of like the sort of hoops that the writer director had to go through in order to completely sell this concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that was really interesting. I think that I put here in my notes that watching after knowing the twist, it still 100% works.
Yes.
Because it does give you little clues, right? It's not super subtle about some of the clues because it telegraphs, I think, the workers, and you sort of know that there's something up with the workers, with Mrs. Mills and mm-hmm. company. But then the sort of added twist with the actual family is the thing where it really kind of gets you. And so I think that that's really hard to do. Like if you're structuring out something in your writing to have a reveal, but then you have your reveal actually not be the big reveal, it's the second reveal is mm-hmm. is the one that's the big one. I think that's really tough to do. So I kind of commend them for that piece.
Yeah. Cause I remember the first time watching it and, you know, kind of figuring out along the way, these, you know, the housekeepers are definitely ghosts. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, what are they going to do? How are they going to get them out of the house? Or are they going to try to kill them? What's going to happen? And then you have that whole situation with the other family in there and the little boy, Victor, mm-hmm. and the old woman. And you're like, wait, what is happening? So it gets kind of murky at that point, and you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen next. They're going to just move, I guess. And then mm-hmm. it's like, bang, they're ghosts. They've been ghosts this whole time. And they're invading the other people's house. And you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute. What? Yeah. Yeah. Some of the other stuff that I put in here was, I put, oh, Christ, this junk room. Like, no, thank you. Right? Like, if you go to IMDb, that's the trailer image is of mm-hmm. when she's in this quote unquote junk room, where I'm yes. like, oh, I wish I would have this, this like 30 by 30 junk room that she's got. But she's got that in there, and she's got all of the Christ, the Christ-like figurines are like the, oh, isn't that what it is? It's like a Mary, and it's like something like that, to where they're like mannequins, or like they're that sort of stuff. And
yeah, like a dress form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so we had that I didn't particularly love, because that still is kind of like, oh no, don't go in there, don't do that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also had Anne's drawing, which I thought was effective, to where she's kind of like, it's when she's basically trying to scare her brother, I think. And she's sort of drawing out like her family and the old woman and all that kind of stuff
mm-hmm.
that she sees. And to where that's sort of one of my little triggers is the creepy kid.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh no, 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 no. And so I was watching this and I'm kind of like, okay, so I know that they're all ghosts at the end, but how in the world did they get to that point? And so mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that Alejandro Amenábar is the writer director, and he also did the basis of Vanilla Sky, like the Open Your Eyes is what the movie was called.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's interesting that they use a real disease, which I'm not going to look up, but it's when you're, you know, sensitive to the sun, basically. Yes. And so it's like a plausible thing to where I'm like, oh, okay, this is World War II. This is kind of some foggy Londonish somewhere sort of a place, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to get too deep into, well, would they actually have this, or would they not really have this, or where's the doctor, or, you know, that sort of thing. But it does lead me to, like, I sit there and I think, like, what kind of a parent would be treating her kids like this? And then it sort of makes you think, like, oh, well, she does wake up in the movie and she's screaming and she's crying. And then you sort of, you know, once it's revealed what it is that she did, you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, she was so controlling and so obsessive and so, you know, would basically like a helicopter parent to the utmost.
Yeah.
Where she didn't allow the kids to do anything in fear of them getting sick or hurt or what have you, to where they it ended up working out to where they were the ghost and that sort of thing. So anyway, I just really liked all of that kind of setup, I guess. One of the other things that I thought in here was another good writing moment was the tension break that is in here. And it's when they're talking about doves and the kids are trying to figure out like if the doves are ghosts or something like that. And the daughter says, well, the doves are anything but holy. And then the brother says that they poo on our windows.
Yeah.
And that made me laugh, because otherwise it's a really sort of somber, serious type of a film.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has that one little joke in there to where that really sort of hit a lot harder than I guess I expected, or I definitely didn't remember it, but I thought that was particularly interesting. What did you think of when Christopher Eccleston comes in, when the father comes in? Like, yeah, was that something that you were expecting, or was that something that you were surprised by, or what do you think about that?
I was definitely surprised. And then he ended up leaving a few days later. Like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah. Can you imagine that, though, in a script? Like, say that if I got an assignment to read a coverage and it had a character that shows up that late and then is there for probably like 5 to 10 pages and then leaves. That would probably be one of my first notes is, well, this guy's not like, what is the point of this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he's coming in so late. He's been set up, sure, but what, like, why? Like, why is he even here?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it does end up working because it's just another sort of like pressure point onto her. Like, it just keeps on being the thing that it sort of gives Grace what she wants. It gives Nicole Kidman's character what she wants for a moment. And then she sort of, you know, it's like a false positive,
mm-hmm.
in the structure. And then it just sort of, you know, goes worse and worse for her.
So, yeah. Because you're like, oh, they're going to be a happy family. They're all back together. And then he's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves. And it's just, it's like, oh, no. And that adds to her, like, stress levels, too, near the end. And really makes her snap when, you know, shit starts hitting the fan even more.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the, what would you say the sort of image is in this movie? I feel like this image has either been targeted or made fun of, either through like a scary movie sort of a thing, or I feel like this is the sort of moment that if you're going to sort of lampoon this film, this is the moment that you would choose. What moment do you think I'm thinking of there?
I have no idea what you're asking.
Well, it's the moment of the movie for me. It's when the old woman is pretending to be the daughter.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
You know, to where I feel like you see that a lot in like a scary movie sort of thing, where they're either doing The Sixth Sense or they're doing this movie where it's got someone in like the middle of the room,
mm-hmm.
and then it ends up being somebody silly instead of somebody in this film. And that was one of the things that sort of popped into my head was I was like, wow, this is like really. Kind of, I don't know, it was sort of like it was a pushing the not really like a realism, but it was like I didn't love that it was such an old woman kind of a thing, I guess.
Yeah,
and that was one of the things where I was like, I don't know, this isn't as scary as I wanted it to be, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that that's
was the, yeah, that was like the only note that I really I think had in terms of that. Oh, I do like when they, the children on the rewatch kind of give it away, what the situation is, because they're talking about, basically like the time before their mom went crazy,
mm-hmm.
or the time before she had all this stress, or back when she was happier or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, ooh, it just kind of has all of these little pieces of, like hints that it gives you on rewatch.
Yes. You know? They said, what did they say? They said something along the lines of, remember what happened last time?
Mm-hmm.
She got angry or something. And she's like, what happened? She has no idea.
Yeah. And then I thought it was, kind of surprising that the method that she chooses wasn't, like a little more subtle for her, because she shoots herself. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I thought that, I guess I'm so used to, like Stephen King stuff where someone dies and then they come back and they're like half alive and they're like in their, what their body looked like when they were dead kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like expecting her to have,
half of a head.
Yeah, yeah. Or like taking too many pills as the way that she died or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, well, that was really interesting. Like, how in the world did she manage to use that shotgun? Like, some of those sorts of things were like interesting choices, I guess.
Yes. And now that I'm thinking about it, it's like, how would you reach the trigger?
I mean, I think you used your foot, I think is how you do it. Like you, without getting too morbid, I believe that you hold the shotgun underneath your chin and then you use your foot to pull the trigger.
Have you Googled this?
No, it's just one of the many things that I know.
Okay, next up.
That's right. What about the housekeepers when they are when they're dealing with the graves? Because that was something in my memory that was the kids' graves, and that was her grave.
Ah.
And so in my memory, I was like, oh yeah, that big reveal when it turns out that it's you know, the family is the one that's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And so my memory was right in that it's the family that was dead, but not so much when it comes to how the reveal is done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was really good, too.
I love the, like, old English death photos when she's going through there. Yeah. She's like, why are their eyes all closed? And I'm like, no. You really don't know? Mm-hmm. And then later you see the family's photo in there and you're like, oh, mind blown.
Yeah. I don't know that I've seen, I don't even know how to say her name, but it's Mrs. Mills.
Mm-hmm.
She's got an interesting first name, but I feel like I've seen her in a lot of things, but because she has kind of one of those faces.
Yes.
But as I look through her filmography, she's in she's in a million things. She's in 134 things.
Yes.
Oh, she's in Lost. That's how I know her.
She was in something else. I forget what it... Well, she's in, like, literally everything. But I recognized her later watching again. And I was like, oh, my gosh, she's in one of my favorite movies, and I don't remember which one it is. And that escapes me now as well. So yeah.
I'm sure it's in there somewhere. But yeah, she plays sort of towards the end of Lost. She plays one of the characters that, like, knows more than what it seems like she should know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely where I knew her from, so I'm glad I looked that up. But yeah, I mean, she just kind of has one of those faces and plays like a little old lady really well.
Yes.
What did you think of Nicole Kidman in this? Because like I said, this is kind of her after a big showy performance in Moulin Rouge. And then here she's playing a much different sort of a character. What did you think of her?
I thought she was great. And mm-hmm. she hasn't really had a role like this since.
Mm-hmm. Because
they're typically very upbeat and fun, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so this is a nice contrast.
Right, yeah. I feel like she either plays upbeat and fun or she plays really sort of austere and kind of like prim and proper.
Mm-hmm.
And like she sort of like holds everything back like she in, like Big Little Lies. My wife and I watched that and she's sort of like everything is wonderful on the outside and then is in an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so she kind of has sort of like this to where she has this sort of mask of, oh, I'm all put together and everything's wonderful. And then really she's on the struggle bus. So,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, have you seen any of the other films by this director? How about that?
I don't know.
Yeah, the only one that I had seen, like I said, was it was Open Your Eyes or Abre Los Ojos is the original name of the of Vanilla Sky. But other than that, I hadn't seen anything from him. And I was kind of surprised because I was like, okay, well, this is really well done. Like, this is really a solid film. And mm-hmm. I believe this is his only English language movie.
Oh.
Which I think is really kind of a shame. Oh, actually, he did a movie called Regression. In 2015 with Ethan Hawke and Emma Watson.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know that I've seen that. It doesn't sound like that's one that I need to see.
No, I think I've seen it. I don't recall it, though.
Huh, interesting. Interesting, interesting. Well, anything else about the others before we move on to the controversial pick?
Nope. I've got nothing else.
Okay.
Can't wait to talk about this because I'm very angry with you for choosing this movie.
I love it. I love it. All right. So our we'll go ahead and get into it. Our second film, it is from 2011, and it is the Ben Wheatley film Kill List.
One, two, three. Abracadabra.
And the IMDb plot synopsis is nice and short and sweet, and it goes like this. Nearly a year after a botched job, a hitman takes a new assignment with the promise of a big payoff for three killings. What starts off as an easy task soon unravels, sending the killer into the heart of darkness. Okay, so like I had said, this is a film that I had not seen. This was a film that was a recommendation from a different podcast that I listened to. And so this was the one that I was like, oh yeah, I've got this on my deal. I might as well just, see what this is all about. I knew that it was a Scottish film, right? Or an Irish film, Scottish film.
Scottish,
and,
I think.
Yeah. And, I was like, okay, so I know that it's going to be a challenge for me to fully grasp everything because I know that I'm not going to understand all of the dialogue. One of the things that I thought was interesting about the film was it talked about how it was written and directed by Ben Wheatley, but it was also co-written by Amy Jump. But the dialogue in some of the scenes, specifically the dinner scene at the beginning of the film, that was mostly improvised by the cast. And so I was like, oh, now I know why I had no idea what was being said for long stretches of the film.
Oh,
and then Ariel sent me a message saying, I don't know if I completely grasped everything that they were saying here. So you may have to help me out. And I was like, yeah, OK, well, I'll do that. But it was a lot of stuff to where I had it up loud at my house. And I was like, God, I don't know how much louder I can make this. And I cannot make out what they're saying.
It was a challenge. And they didn't have subtitles.
Right.
Yes.
That's right. So I will reserve what I thought of it, and I will just go ahead and let you vent. Tell me what you thought about 2011's Kill List.
Well, oh my goodness.
Where to begin?
Yeah, I don't even know where to start. It's just your typical like assassin movie where these guys are two hitmen and like the synopsis said, something goes wrong, but just how they handled killing the people and God. Yeah, I love horror, but certain things really like get under my skin and make me like nauseous. Mm-hmm. And one of the kills in this where the guy's like beating a guy with a hammer was too much. Like I can't do the movie Seed. That gets me every time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting here like, oh my God, Eric, I'm going to kill you for choosing this.
Yes. And
so once it gets to the, like, finger quote, doing air quotes over here, the good part where it starts getting good, mm-hmm. it's just, it flies off the frickin' rails and
yes.
not in a good way.
Right. So what I think is interesting about the movie is that I think that I like that it did sort of subvert expectations, I guess, because you go through the majority of this movie, and like you were saying, it's pretty cut and dry that it's just a revenge kind of hitman sort of a film. Right. Yes. And you get the first kill, and it's the priest, and they kind of go about that okay, and they get the second one, and the second one's super gory, and I was covering part of the screen and, you know, flinching. And it was like, I told our frequent co-host Andrew, I said that it was basically like the bad parts of the movie Hush with Mike Flanagan, where there's like a lot of hand mutilation in that movie.
Yes.
And so then they had a moment similar, the same moment that you were talking about, where I was like, oh my God, no, like don't do this.
It's like, why?
And especially like the hitting of the knee. And I was like, oh no. Was really off-putting, right?
Yes.
And so from that point forward, I was like, okay, so maybe this is going to be the worst part, is kind of what I was hoping, right? Because I was like,
jokes on you.
Yeah. I was like, maybe they got all of the gore out here, and, you know, cause he kind of goes off the rails and he goes to his next kill, and you don't really see him killing them. You see this sort of aftermath of it, mm-hmm. Except for him shooting a guy that's all bloody and gross.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, like I'm okay with that. Like, oh, whatever. I'm all right with that. But it was, when we get to the moment where you're having the internet problems is the point that I want to talk about. So we get this like, oh my God. So it's like a mix of The Wicker Man and like Midsommar. And
yes, that's like exactly what I got.
Yeah. And I was like, what in the hell is this movie? I was like, what in the world is this? Oh man. So I guess before getting into that, we had some of the things that I thought was really interesting. So I watched this in two pieces, and I watched this earlier today, like right before you did actually. And so I go and I leave and I go and pick up my kid from school, and she's like, oh, are you watching a movie today? And I said, yeah. And she goes, what are you watching? And I start describing it to her, and I was like, oh, it's kind of like a hitman movie. I said, but there's this girlfriend character, and she takes this mirror off the wall and like does this carving into the back of the mirror. And I was like, and she did that for a reason. That's in the movie for a reason. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure it's going to have something to do with something, right? Because otherwise, why would it be in the movie? And so it's after that horrific kill, I believe, is when she is out by the hotel just kind of waving at him. And I'm like, what mm-hmm. in the absolute hell is he doing? Like, what is she doing? And I was like, okay, something is weird with her. So maybe she's some weird person that's in charge of all of this or something like that. Instead of the it was like the fake Joe Biden guy, like the guy that looks sort of like demented Joe Biden.
He does, though.
He does. Yeah, he does. Struan Roger is his name, but it's the client is his character name.
Yes.
And yeah, he definitely does look like kind of crazy Joe Biden. But so we had the girlfriend, the Emma Fryer character, who gives this kind of wave. And we had the weird doctor visit soon after that, that Jay mm-hmm. goes to.
Yeah, and the doctor's like switched and says weird stuff to him. And it's just like, oh God.
Right, yeah, because he's like asking about his sex life and stuff. And if he's under a lot of stress, and he's got what looks to me like some sort of like a blood infection or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because he's all red throughout his chest and his arms, and the doctor's not real interesting. Or not real interested in that. And then we got the very claustrophobic scene where Michael Smiley and Neil Maskell are in the sort of like almost like a catacomb sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're down there, and that was a little bit of like a nod to The Descent, which is one of my favorite horror movies.
Yes.
And that's another one of the things that really gets me is that claustrophobic feeling. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, okay, this is another one of those sorts of things. So it's not really a revenge thing because it's got this crazy kind of cult situation. Because like you had mentioned to me on Twitter, they have the, you know, it looks like the third person of this three person list is a wealthy person. And so they're kind of like, hey, this is all right. And they're out in the middle of the woods. And then they see all of these torches and they get closer and they find out that like everyone's naked and they've got these weird sort of like Wicker Man type masks on. It's like Wicker Man and Eyes Wide Shut combined kind of too. And they've got these weird masks on. And I think don't they kill somebody in that?
Yeah, they hang a lady.
Oh, that's right. The lady she like hangs herself basically, right?
Yeah.
Doesn't she like step off the thing?
Yep.
And then they all clap. And I was like, what in the world? And then that, of course, is reminiscent of the torture scene that you had already mentioned where the guy keeps saying thank you each time he keeps torturing him.
Mm-hmm.
The main characters point out that the priest right before he's killed, he gives like a little smile and says a thank you. And they're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
And I still did not really tweak like, oh, this is a movie about a cult. I was just kind of like, what the hell? What is this cult doing? Mm-hmm. And who do they really need to kill? Like, I was so slow on the pickup on that. I was like, okay, so where's the dude? Because the dude can't be in this group. This just happened to be a group that they came across. Is kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. I originally thought the girlfriend of the friend was mm-hmm. like another hitman that was going to go after them, but I was like, why is she drawing on the back of the mirror?
Yeah, I figured, oh, for sure she's going to like kill the wife or something.
Yeah.
Or she's going to do something to somebody here. It's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah.
And then she just sort of disappears. And I was like, wait a minute, what? I was like, what? Because she's not, I believe she is, she's not in too many things. This Emma Fryer, I believe she is a British stand-up comedian, actually.
Mm.
And so she doesn't often partake in roles such as this. We'll say it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's usually in a lot lighter fare. And so we have this sort of cult thing, like I said, which I was sort of slow to pick up. That's actually the big threat and all this kind of stuff. And then they all start chasing after him. And then that's when I was like, oh, this is actual horror stuff now. Like before, it was just kind of like your revenge gore gross kind of a movie. And then I was like, oh no, this is actually going to do it was going to do some horror stuff with them being naked and chasing after someone. I'm like, no thank you, right? Like that's not something that I would be super interested in if that was listed in the here's what you have to do to be in this cult. I'm like, no, I'm out.
Yeah,
I'm not chasing after anyone like that.
Yeah, no.
And so we do get the sort of sacrifice of the gal character, the Michael Smiley character, mm-hmm. To where he dies, and then it seems like the Jay character is also going to be dead because he's kind of taken out at one point. And I'm like, oh, now we just have the wife and the daughter. And so I like the fact that they show the wife and the son. And I like the fact that they show the wife and she's capable. She's knows that he's a hitman this whole time. It's not like that sort of like superhero trope of, oh, I never knew and I can't mm-hmm. let other people know my secret. And she's got a gun and handles a gun and shooting people and not having any sort of issues defending herself.
Nope.
And I'm like, wow, what in the world is going, like, where is this going?
Like, she's like not missing a shot. She just like kills this guy, kills that guy, whips around, kills that other person, like in the house.
Yep. And she's like double tapping everyone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, like, wow. Like she's like very expertly killing people. Right.
Yes.
And I wrote in my notes twice, like, I have no idea where this is going.
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing that's exciting for me about the movie. And, you know, I think we're going to probably differ on the overall enjoyment of the film, but
just a little bit.
I think what's interesting about it is it does give you that sense of, I don't know what's going to happen mm-hmm. in the movie. Right. And so we do have, this end piece where finally that third title card comes up and it says The Hunchback. And we find out that Jay's got he's like on It's like gladiator style, basically, to where it's one-on-one combat with this hunchback looking thing. Right?
Yeah.
And again, spoilers, but so we have this one-on-one, and he's faring pretty well, and he only gets injured a time or two, and then he's really kind of he gets the upper hand and really kind of savagely kills the sort of hunchback creature that is all covered in a sheet, basically. Yes.
And the whole time there's like metal noises, like, you know, metal against metal, but they're just like poking these daggers at each other. Mm-hmm. So the sound mm-hmm. effects were making me crack up.
Right. They were a little on the a little overdone. and so they, you know, you have the big reveal to where they congratulate him and they're clapping for him for killing this hunchback, and they start pulling off the different masks, and you see that the cult is the client, and you that has been paying them to do all these kills, and then you find out that the hunchback is not only the wife, but it's the wife with her son, with their son on her back, and that's what he was mostly stabbing into, especially at the end, was yep. his son.
Yes.
So very, very long way around. What did you think of that ending, Ariel?
Oh my god, I was left angry and confused, and I have so many questions.
Uh-huh. Like,
because it's like, why? Then there's no notion of, like, you know, at the end of Hereditary, it's like, okay, they're doing all this stuff because it's an exorcism, there's a demon. Mm-hmm. This is just a cult killing people. There's no story beyond that. So that pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
As I want to know more. But mm-hmm. they really left us hanging there, and then they crown him with like the straw hat, and I'm just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, and then he gets the crown. They're all clapping. He doesn't look real happy about it, and then it goes kill list right after that, right?
Yes.
Like, it just is immediately a smash to black there, and you're like, what in the hell did I just watch?
Yes. So I am not a fan. kudos to the actors and director and writer, everyone involved. It's great, but it's not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's probably going to be sort of what, if someone's going to go discover this movie after being spoiled, it's going to be really like a what sort of thing do you like, mm-hmm. right? And so I think it is kind of funny to me that this is the one that I pick for you on your first recording is the highly controversial kill list, which is not exactly the sort of movie that if I had seen before, I would have been like, oh yeah, Ariel will like this.
Yeah. this is something to talk about, so it's fine.
That's right, yeah. So I think, like I said, I think that the reason that I enjoy it is because of that sort of unsettling unpredictability that it does, like that mm-hmm. that sort of feeling of, okay, yeah, here comes act two, and this is the here comes the dark night of the soul for the main character, and here's where everything goes bad, and now here comes the, you know, there's no formula, it doesn't feel like.
Yeah, and you can't predict anything, which makes it fun.
Yeah, and so it makes it fun, but it is all how that ending sort of strikes mm-hmm. each person, each audience member, to where I think that, you know, for me, I'm kind of like, wow, that's crazy. All right. And next movie, to where if my wife were to see this, she's like, no, that's fucked up. Like, no, cults are real. Like, cults are bad news. And that would stick with her for a long time. Right. So
yeah.
Where I just kind of watch it, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, cults. I'm sure they're real, but I'm not going to mess with them. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. So I guess that doesn't quite like stick with me as much as I think that it could.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what are some of the notes that I wrote down here?
Like, I think if they could have hinted more towards a demon or what they were really doing, mm-hmm. that would have made me enjoy it a bit more, because then I'm not with this question of why.
Mm-hmm. So like if it was something to where it was out of these people's hands.
Yes.
You would have enjoyed it more?
I think so.
Mm, that's interesting.
Because they're just like killing people and sending people to get killed by these assassins. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, why? Yeah, and they leave that open, and it's like, I want to know and look back and be like, oh, you were hinting towards this the whole time, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's just the cult just killing people for a reason that's not explained at all to the viewer.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I do so often, like in my day to day, is write, you know, that the structure could have been this, or this needs to be structurally more of that. Mm-hmm. And this is such a structural mess. Because you have this beginning, and it doesn't tell you who any of them really are. Like, it opens on dialogue, which it works fine, but it doesn't say, they're hitmen, and here's their task, and we're going to break the film up and have it be 1, 2, 3. They're going to go through the different kills. Like, it is kind of, it's a little shaggy in terms of the structure. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just really is execution dependent. Like, if I would not suggest this as a script to emulate because of the way that the movie ends. But I think that because Ben Wheatley wrote and directed it, he sort of, you know, you like have an idea of what you're aiming at or what you're wanting to do. But this did come out of a idea that they were going to do a short film for. And so they had a short film idea, and then they expanded it out into a feature. And so for me, it sort of feels like that. It feels like, okay, they've got this idea of this cult, and how do we make this stretch out into a film?
Yes.
Right? Because it doesn't, it has like a third act, but it doesn't have like a denouement, doesn't have like everything where it all gets put together at the end. Mm-hmm. Like, it just ends right after the twist. You're like, the hell? what exactly is going on now?
Yeah, it's like they had the short, and then we're like, okay, we have to make this an hour and a half. Let's have them drinking here, getting like shit-faced and laughing, and then touching moments and then other stuff, and I'm like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And then the guys are fighting, and I'm like,
yeah. And it's okay. Because it's a tonal mess. Like, it's everywhere on the spectrum for the tone. And and it was one of those where like some of the script I really liked, where it's when the Michael Smiley character, the friend, he says, he has a little character detail to where Jay's trying to give him something, and he says that, I'm not eating anything red at the moment. And I'm like, oh, that's fun. Like, that's like a quirky little, like, very specific thing from a character. Mm-hmm. Right. And then we had little bits where I'm like, oh, okay, so is Jay like some kind of crazy psychopath, because he finds that dead rabbit and eats the rabbit?
Yeah.
So the cat brings the rabbit in, and he basically, you know, just he makes like a meal out of just the meat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what the hell is the deal with this guy? But also, I loved that it's one of those where I liked it. I liked what they did, but I also was frustrated by it, with the with the beginning not being super clear right away why the wife character is so upset with Jay, why Shell is so mad. Like, we get that he hasn't worked in a while, and he's sort of blaming it on his back, and she's kind of saying like, oh, BS, like, that's, you know, that's not an excuse. We're almost out of money. You need to get back out there again. Mm-hmm. And I kind of liked that, but I also would have liked knowing that she knew what was going on earlier, I guess, because it feels like it's revealed that she is sort of knowing that he is a murderer, like, later on in the script than I would have predicted, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought that was going to be a little, or I thought that that could have been upfront a little bit more.
Yes. And so, there was a point when I was watching and I'm like, is he just insane and killing different parts of himself? Because at one point I was like, this isn't making any sense anymore. Like, when his friend died, I was like, oh, he's totally like got multiple personalities. He's killing them, and it's like it's a way for his therapy, because he's a recovering, you know, hitman, retired hitman, and maybe he needs to take care of the issues that he has from it, and that's what he was doing. But then,
that would have been really interesting.
That would have been, yeah, that's where I thought it was going, but then it didn't go there.
That would have been, that would have struck me as something like Identity or something like that.
Yes.
Where it turns out, you know, it's all in his head or whatever.
Yeah, like High Tension.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, this is high tension. Got it. And it's like, nope, it's a cult.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, really. So when we had that early moment, I think that's one of the early parts of the film that can either make it or break it for some people, where we have that toxic relationship and that sort of quiet rising tension of the dinner, to where they have all four of the characters basically that are over there together, and it's just sort of gets a little more uncomfortable the farther we go, and you're like, yes. God, this couple, I never want to meet this couple, this Jay and Shell couple, because he is just on her case about, oh, why did you use like the, what is it, a chemistry set, he says at one point, because she has a measuring cup out there. She has a liquid measuring cup instead of using some like fancy deal. And then she mentions a rock and he loses it and then rips the tablecloth off the table.
Yep.
I'm like, what sort of behavior is this? Like, no, thank you. Is what I put there.
Seriously.
And I'm like, how, like this Fiona character, the friend's girlfriend, you know, that ends up being in the cult. I was like, how could you just sit there and just not leave? Like, I would be out of that. Seriously. I would be out of there so quick.
Yeah, it's like, I got to go walk my fish.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you know what? Actually, my mom needs me. I got to leave.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And like, I didn't find myself liking any of the characters.
No.
Which you don't have to, but it was just, it just made it really hard to watch. And then at the end, I'm just like, I don't feel anything for any of these people. I'm just mad now that Eric made me watch this.
Do you feel like that when you, when you write something, do you feel like you always give somebody redeeming qualities? Or have you ever tried to do something like this?
I try to give them something. Not always, because I guess in certain cases you want the reader or viewer to not like them. But I feel like with such high stakes of this story, you kind of want to feel for them. And when the wife and the son died, I was just like, well, I don't feel bad for anybody. You all deserve it because you're all awful. Like,
God damn it. What did I have to watch this for?
Yes.
Why did I waste my hour and a half or whatever it was? Hour 35. Yeah. That is interesting that you mentioned that, because you watch Jay and he is a bastard. Like, he is not a good person at all.
No.
And normally, whether the person is a good character or not, if he's our protagonist, we'll be like, oh, he's endearing to me in some way. But here I'm like, God, this guy sucks. Like, he's just doing all of these terrible things.
And then he doesn't even die at the end.
No. Yeah. And he ends up being the winner, right? He ends up being the big winner of the group. Let's see. I want to see if there's anything else in here that I had written down. Oh, the hotel conversation, it gave me so much anxiety, to where he gets his card denied and then he's talking to his wife and he's like, oh, it's going to be so obvious and all this sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, that's for me, where I was like, oh, she does know what he does. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So that was one of the times where I'm like, oh my goodness, like, get it together, you guys. You know, because how many times have you seen, whether it's like, I mean, I think the classic is like a Gross Point Blank, or like a Umbrella Academy had characters that were somewhat like this, to where you have like the hitmen that are sort of bumbling. Or that make little, this is my 9-to-5 job kind of a joke about what they do. And so in this case, I was like, God, these guys are like doing this job, but they're also doing it poorly, which is really quite a choice.
Yeah, quite a choice.
Quite a choice. So yeah, let's see. I already mentioned the priest. Oh, I was really concerned about, or I was really concerned. I was really questioning the title card placement, because that was, like, I was very much swept up into this movie, to where like I said, the biggest thing it has going for it for me is that the unpredictability of it. And so it has that, the library, or the priest, and then it goes through the priest stuff. And then it introduces the librarian. I'm like, wait a minute, where's the title card? Like, why aren't they introducing him?
Yeah.
And then they go see that he's into some sort of something that's messed up. And then of course he gets the torture scene. And I was, of course, very surprised and shocked at how much of that they showed and how much of that they did, like we already mm-hmm. mentioned. I just put, oh, Jesus Christ, is all I put in my notes there, because it was an excuse for me to write something down so I didn't have to look at the screen.
Yeah. that's how you do it.
Yeah, that's how I do it.
I took notes this whole movie, you guys.
Yep. Yep. That's right. So yeah, I mean, my final note on the film is something that I guess we have already talked about, but I put, wow, that turned into something that was much different than what I thought it was going to be.
Yes.
And I think that that's something that I would like to try to do. I think that I would like to try to have an ending that is not set up in the same way that you would expect in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Because like, I've always feel like, oh, well, I've got to set this up. I've got to telegraph this and I've got to mention this little detail because this is going to be important later and that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I guess you don't need to.
Yeah, I guess you don't need to. That's what Ben Wheatley says. You don't have to do that.
No. And like near the end, for some reason, it kept making me think of this film. I don't want to say the name of because I don't know if I should endorse people watching it. It rhymes with like a Blurbian realm. Yes. And when they open the shower curtain or whatever the freaking wife and son is in, that's like exactly what I got. And I was like, mm-hmm. ew. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I wonder if anyone else gets this like vibe from that, because I feel like it's, I don't know, it's in that same realm of like, what the hell?
It is. Yeah, it is one of those, because it is sort of like, I don't want people to watch the movie and expect to be like feeling good when they come out of it.
No.
You know?
I'm just angry.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those where it's somewhat like on this show, the infamous recording is when I made my co-host Rachel, when I made her watch Old Boy for the first time.
I've never seen that.
Oh, what and I came about? Out of, well, I don't want to tell you. And so I came out of it thinking, awesome, that is probably one of my favorite movies ever, and it is probably one of my favorite movies. And she hated it. Hated it and just didn't like anything about it. And so it is somewhat reminiscent to this, to where it's a film that is keeping you off balance and doesn't telegraph what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it finally goes crazy, like it goes crazy.
Yes.
Right. And so Ariel might be able to understand that I like movies that when they go crazy, they go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Because that's the script that I'm working on.
Yes.
When it goes crazy, then it really exactly goes crazy. That. Yeah. And so that's,
but it's fun.
I guess,
like yeah. Your script is awesome and fun. This is confusing and aggravating.
Well, one of them got made and one of them didn't, so I don't know.
Yours will get made.
Well, there it is.
Yeah.
If Ariel says so, it'll be so. Right? That's the, what is my wife into? It's manifesting. That's what
yes.
it is. Yeah, mm-hmm. We're manifesting it. So, yes, I think that judging how you reacted to this film, you should probably not seek out Old Boy.
Okay.
Because while I think it is amazing, I don't know that you're going to love it, because it is also brutal and it also has a like, what the fuck is going on here kind of a thing. Like, wait a minute, what exactly is happening now?
You don't need to tell me twice. I'm not even going to Google it. Maybe I'll read a synopsis and then be like, okay, I can live without seeing it.
Yeah, there you go. That'll be good. That'll be good for you. I mean, it is similar in one way where it sets up as one thing and then it turns into something else. So maybe there is something mm-hmm. about that. This is like a little niche genre that I am discovering on a recording that I actually really like.
Hmm. Does that mean you do like Hereditary?
I do. Yeah, I really do like Hereditary, actually.
Yeah.
And then that's actually one of my favorite movie watching experiences with my wife.
To where
she just sort of like kept sliding down the couch and kept like covering her ears because she's the type where she can watch anything, but she can't listen to all of the sounds of things.
Oh, that is the perfect movie for someone who's very sensitive with sound.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, it obviously starts with the sister or with the daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from that point forward, like the rest of the time, she's just like, got a pillow over one side of her face and her finger in her ear. And I got a lot of good photos of her not enjoying that movie.
Oh my God. Does that mean you walk around the house and just like go Like,
ooh, that is a good idea. If I could do it exactly like that, I probably would. Although by this point it's been so long, Dory, she'd probably just say, "What are you doing?
Yeah,
what
why are you?
Oh, no! It's a reference to Hereditary." She's like, "Oh, that movie I didn't like." Okay, good joke.
This could be a topic on a different episode.
Could be.
Movies with gross sounds that haunt you for life.
Gross sound movies. That's really funny. Yeah, it's really funny. Well, anyway, so you would not recommend Kill List.
No.
I would recommend it, but I would say you have to know what you're getting yourself into.
That's fair. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that both of us would recommend the others. I think that the others is a really sort of good look at ghost stories, right? Like of, you have a little bit of possession in there, but it's a lot of like ghosts. And then when you get to the end, you find out, oh, it's ghosts the other way around, which I think is an awesome concept.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's just something that you don't really ever think about, I guess.
No, it's so much fun. And I was debating between the others and Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Cole Kidman won.
Yeah. That's right. We watched The Sixth Sense not too long ago with my 12-year-old. And
what did she
was
think?
Like, well, she was kind of like, what? wait, no, pause it. I was like, no, just keep watching. And she's like, oh my gosh. And so she was kind of mind blown. And she is, I mean, she's a very voracious horror watcher. Mm-hmm. To where we found out her thing that she doesn't like is like lights on, lights off sorts of things.
Oh, yes.
And so we tried, my wife and I watched Lights Out. And she watched that trailer and was like, nope, like that's not for me. I can do Sixth Sense, you know. Stranger Things is one of her favorite shows, of course, because she's perfectly in that demographic.
Yes.
But she, you know, one of her favorite movies is It, the first is Chapter One specifically. But she's so she's not too worried about like gory stuff, to where, you know, she's like, that's ew, good. Gross, but yeah. But it's more like the something's going to get me in the dark kind of a thing that she's more sensitive to.
Well, it's totally valid.
Yeah. But yeah, so we have yet to, Hereditary is not going to be on that list. I've told her several times that she's, since we decided that she needs to watch the others though.
Yeah. I think she'll like it.
Yeah.
You can tell her I said it.
Yeah. I think Ariel she'll says. Like it. Yeah. And I think that the thing that it has going for it is it's not really like, it's a fairly tame, mm-hmm. right, to where it's not anything too severe, like it's spooky at places.
Yeah, it's not straight up scary,
right?
It's well, more thriller suspense.
That's right. Well, that's why the what did I call you earlier, the
cowardly custard.
That's right. That's why that's your selection, right? That I think that pretty much represents our personality types, I would say.
Yes.
You've got this really well done, but, you know, in terms of horror, a little on the tamer side. And I've got this really crazy, depressing kind of ending.
Yeah.
Sort of a film.
Yeah. And then you feel terrible about yourself after.
That's right. Yeah. It's just like, you know, therapy inducing. That's what I'm looking for. That's my demographic. That's what I'm really going after right there.
I'll send you a list of all the movies I don't like and you'll probably.
Ooh, yeah. I love them. It. I'll be like, that'll be a theme. Movies Ariel doesn't want to see.
Yes.
Or didn't enjoy. Yeah,
exactly.
I will do that. All right, well, anything else about either one of these films before we say goodbye?
Nope, other than watch the others and you can pass on Kill List and you'll be just fine.
I like it. I like the recommendation and the strong not recommendation. All right, so if you have any comments, suggestions, or movies that you want to hear us talk about, you can email us at plainlabelpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow the show over at Twitter. Our handle is @plainlabelpod, where you can follow me over there. I'm @ericwilliams79. We also have an Instagram account. Just search for Plain Label Podcast, and you'll find us over there. If you wanted to help out the show a little bit, you could check out our show notes, where you'll find the link to our Amazon wish list, where you can get us something that we don't necessarily want to buy for ourselves, but we would like to have. So I do want to thank Ariel for coming on for the first time ever. If people wanted to hear more from you or get in touch with you, where could they do that?
You can find me on the Twitterverse at Ariel Relaford, AriielRelaford.
Wonderful. What about your podcast?
Oh, yeah. Our Screamwriters podcast.
Yeah. You can find her over at Screamwriters podcast, right?
Yeah. Screamwriters PC on Twitter.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for listening. And you can join us next week when I'm joined by Ariel's co-host, Patrick Mediate, as we discuss body horror with a look at the films Tusk and Possessor.